And before I introduce our speaker, she has asked me to read a quote for her, and this is so true to me. I appreciate her sharing this. I came to AA in order to stop drinking. What I received in return was my life. That is from page 327 of the Big Book. I am very pleased to introduce our speaker, Christina. She is a wonderful person inside and out, and I am so very proud to know her, even though it's only been a short while. Christina?
Hello. I'm Christina, and I'm an alcoholic.
Christina.
And tomorrow, I will have 4 years of sobriety. I don't think I would have ever been this excited about something before, but 4 years, to me, today is like, whoa. It's a lot, because I was not able to do that before. A little bit about my background. I was born at the end of July, the hottest month of the summer, in 93. So I'll be 26 in July. I came from, I guess, a lower to middle class family. My parents had a high school education, but that was about it. We lived in North Carolina, and then there was a younger brother and two older sisters. And both my parents had siblings before they got together. They both had children before they got together. So I had two half-sisters. When I was growing up, I was like, this is terrible. But looking back now, like, it wasn't a terrible upbringing. We had everything that we needed. You know, my parents showed us love. They showed us how to be responsible. They were good parents. My dad was in a previous recovery program way before I was even in the picture. My mom has struggled on and off with drinking through most of my life. At least I noticed that later. Like I said, I don't think anything was abnormal about the way I grew up. What was abnormal was the way I thought. I was very anxious little girl. I was always just, I used to have panic attacks from 8, 9 years old all the way up till 16. I was just scared of life. I don't know where that fear came from. I don't think anybody put it there. I think it was just something that was there. So I grew up homeschooled. I was homeschooled until probably 10th grade. Being homeschooled in North Carolina, it's kind of like you're in a bubble and you don't really know what else is going on out there. I didn't have a cell phone. It wasn't popular for kids to have cell phones at that time. Everything I knew was my homeschool life, the church friends, my parents, and then all the other parents that were involved in that whole homeschool community. That's all I knew. We were in a Southern Baptist church, and I was like, you know, yay, Jesus. You know, I memorized Bible, passages in the Bible. Like, I was like, I got awards for memorizing passages in the Bible. I had no idea what they meant. I just knew the words. So I was all about that in that time of my life. When I was around 11 or 12 years old is when my dad had his own issues with religion. You know, he was seeking. Put it that way, he was seeking. At the time, I didn't know that. I just knew that he was asking questions to a church, and they were like, I don't know the answers. You guys can go now. And it was church to church, and it was like this world that I knew at the time was disintegrating. There was no church. My mom had to go back to work. She was working 3 jobs. My dad was not working. It was very unstable in our house. I grew up in North Carolina, and in 9th grade, my parents decided, let's go to Alabama. And so we went to Alabama. And it was crazy. It was 2 weeks before they told us we were moving to Alabama. They said, Christina, if there was anywhere you didn't want to go, where would it be? And I was like, Alabama. And spoke that one into existence. And you know, we went to Alabama. And I was 14. Me and my brother was my best friend. We were inseparable. When we moved to Alabama, he went into public school just due to his attention disorder, and my mom couldn't help him, and I was homeschooled. And so I lost my best friend to, you know, public school, and I was in a state where I knew nobody, and I was just learning from a computer because my parents couldn't teach me anymore. I was very, very isolated. So at 14, I had this fear, this sheer anxiety. my parents told me, you know, we're going to put you in public school, and I hated them. I was like, no, I couldn't handle it. I could barely handle the little bubble I was in. But they said, no, we can't help you anymore. We can't teach you anymore. You need to go to public school. And so I went to public school, and I was in a very small town public school in Alabama. And it was very, you could say, small-minded, which was that's just how it was. I guess I wasn't really like that, and I wasn't that small-minded. Although I wasn't a bubble, it was like my small mind was like over here, and their small mind's like way over here. Did not know what was going on. But I didn't talk for the first semester in 10th grade. Didn't talk to anybody. Everybody thought I was a foreign exchange student because I wore this Belgian jacket. I don't exactly look like, you know, I guess you could say like average Alabamian, you know. Like I had long hair. At that time I was very, very tan because I was always in the sun. So it was kind of like that, I'm separate from you, you know. I can't fit in with you guys. So when the first round of report cards came around, everybody figured out that I was smart. And everybody figured out, we're going to get her to do our homework. And so they were like, hey, can you do our homework? And I was like, okay, because I wanted friends, right? I didn't know what was going on. I was like, some way, if I can get a connection with another human and be able to feel comfortable, I'm going to do it. I tried to join band, which is like a really weird group of people, but, you know, they were cool. And so I joined the band. I started to do all these other, you know, students or athletes homework. And so I started to feel that, like, oh, hey, they want to, like, hang out with me. Not even seeing, you know, that I might have been being used or subjecting myself to being used. So there was, you know, my first drink was prior to this. I was having sleeping problems due to just sheer anxiety. And my mom gave me a little cup of wine just to help me go to sleep. And that was the first time I'd ever drank. It wasn't frequent. You know, I wasn't a daily drinker from 11. It was kind of, you know, once a month maybe, or usually whenever she was so tired of me not sleeping and knocking on the door. I'm sure every parent can understand that frustration. So she was just like, you know what? Just here's this. You're going to go to sleep now. And so that worked for a little bit. I got over the sleeping problem for a little bit. So when I was 15 years old, I'm in this new environment. Don't know what's going on. People are like, hey, you want to come over here and hang out with us? I'm like, sure. So I go over there, and I don't even know how I got to this place. I was like 40 minutes away from my house in a state that I don't know, in this like tiny little trailer with like these other kids. There was no adults there. And I was like, I don't know what's going on, but somebody offered me a little Smirnoff Ice, and I was like, okay. So I drank all six of them, sitting down. Didn't know what was going on. I didn't feel it. I didn't feel like when I first drank, I was just like, okay, this is cool. Like, we're all, you know, doing this. This is cool. And I stood up, and I just fell flat on my face. And I thought that was the coolest thing in the world. I was like, wow, this thing just totally changed everything. You know, from that, like, I think I continued to drink that night. I didn't, you know, black out. It was a Smirnoff Ice. And there was only, like, I think there was, like, 18 of them, and I drank, like, 8 of them. So, and the other 4 people had the other one. So we could see that there was a little bit of a difference at the beginning. But, you know, I got up the next day. I was in a tremendous amount of trouble because I did not let my parents know where I was going. But I was so excited about life at that time. I was like, these are cool people. This is cool. And then I started to chase it, you know, anywhere I could get it. You know, like, hey, let's go out this weekend. Let's go somewhere. You guys want to come to my house? You know, my dad worked nights. He worked like a 2 to like 11 shift or something, or maybe it was like later. And so my mom was working a lot, so she was sleeping, and my dad wasn't there. So we just, you know, my brother had his friends over, I had my friends over, boys and girls, mixing it up. It wasn't great. I'm surprised nobody came out of this with a baby. But we started to drink a lot, and it was fun. It helped me not feel so socially awkward. It helped me just feel like there was a group of people that were there for me. I started to kind of reap some of the repercussions from it in high school. I started to not get as good of grades. I started to just, like, be terrible to my parents. At this point, like, I could not stand my mom because she was just didn't know what was going on. But I wasn't telling her what was going on, but she didn't know why her daughter, who was, like, this good girl getting good grades, was just, like, totally the opposite, extremely rebellious, going out and just stuff that your 15-year-old daughter probably shouldn't wear, just doing all these things. And so She was concerned, which I see that now. But at the time, I was like, nope, I want nothing to do with you. So when it started to get really bad in Alabama, I was in the middle of my senior, I was just starting my senior year. One night we went out drinking. I don't know what the occasion was, other than like I think we just graduated. Well, the other class just graduated. I was a junior. I was just hanging out with them. They just graduated, and so I remember I took my mom's car and I was like, "Yeah, I'm just going to a friend's house real quick." And like, I did something really dumb at the high school. Like we put like cereal everywhere, and then like an APB got put on my mom's car, and they were not happy about that. So I kind of got all my driving. Yeah, I was just very restricted. I wasn't allowed to drive. And then I think my parents saw this happening with me, and my brother was just kind of like rebellious and just all over the place. He was starting to hook up with the wrong people, but he wasn't like drinking or doing drugs like I was. So in the middle of my senior year, they said, you know what, we're going to move to Georgia. You know, let's do a geographical change. We're going to move to Georgia. So I came to Georgia 2010, like Rice said, right in the middle of my senior year of high school. Once again, I'm pissed. I'm like, you already did this to me. You already moved me from everybody that I know. And I finally got up this group of friends, of these people that I felt comfortable with. And here we go again. We're off to Georgia. I went from a very small town to like Peachtree City, where it's just like really uppity, and there's a lot of kids in that high school, and I was just overwhelmed. I started to have anxiety attacks again. I was, you know, just open my locker and just like stare, because I don't even know which class I'm going to or what book I need, because the whole high school system was totally different. And so I started to act out again. I started to find the people who've got what I want. I found this guy who was two neighborhoods from me, and he liked to drink, or I think he liked to smoke. I liked to drink, so I thought he liked to drink. I was just, you know, whoever wants to hang out. And so I used to walk to his house in the middle of the night. We would hang out, and I would try to walk back. And then I would, like, try, you know, my best to keep the door unlocked or some window unlocked. But my dad was going through this paranoid time, and every night before bed, he would, like, lock all the windows and lock all the doors. And I'm over here, like, on a trash can trying to unlock my door, my window on the second level. And it was just, like, my dad caught me, and he was like, what are you doing? And I was drunk. And he was just like, he opened the door. He said, go upstairs. I'm not telling your mom about this. I was like, thank God. He told my mom. That's not true. You know, when you parents say, I'm not going to tell, you know, mom or dad, you guys tell them. So I got a firm talking to. But it was New Year's Eve, and I wanted to go out with, you know, this guy for this New Year's Eve party. And my mom wouldn't let me go. You know, I'd already had some troubles. She was like, nope, your sister's in town. I want you to stay here and spend time with your sister. My sister had moved to Pennsylvania with her dad several years before, so I didn't have a connection with her at all through all of this. My other sister lived in Florida, which I actually didn't find out that I had another half-sister until I was, like, 13, because due to my dad's, you know, sometimes when it comes to drinking drugs, we lose contact with our kids. And so that's what happened with him. So it's just me and my brother hanging out. But it was New Year's Eve, and my brother got to go to a party. But it was just not really a party. It was just like at a friend's house. I wanted to go to an actual party. I was like, I'm 17. I want to go to a party. They wouldn't let me go. But for Christmas, right before that, they bought me this like 1.5 liter of Moscato, right? They bought my brother like a little pack of Natty, and they got me this Moscato. So I drank the entire thing to get back at them. I drank the entire 1.5 liter within 45 minutes to get back at my parents. And I went into almost like, what is it called? I was definitely blacked out. I was definitely blacked out, but it was just something else. Alcohol poisoning. Yeah, I almost had I don't know if I did have alcohol poisoning, but they're not about to take their 17-year-old daughter to the doctor and be like, hey, you know, we gave her this. So I don't remember. I don't remember much of the night. I remember I was saying some crazy stuff, and I remember that it was pretty terrible. And I remember the last thing I remember, as I drank the last bit, I couldn't move. I'm reaching for the door, and I'm just trying to get the door open. And I'm like saying my dad or my mom's name, and here comes my dad running up the stairs. That's the last thing I remember. I came to the next day. I was in and out of it all day. And here's the thing: my sister had just had a baby in September. And this is her first time coming down with the baby. And parents were very, you know, consumed with that, which was understandable. And that was the first time I'd seen my sister in several years. So I remember laying on the floor because I wanted to hold the baby. But I was so weak from everything that just happened, and I was just a mess. And my sister's like, you can hold the baby, but you have to lay on the floor. And so I had to lay on my stomach, my arms like this, just to be able to try to hold this little baby. And it was a moment for me that I could see that things weren't going well. It didn't stop me. I kept on going. I got my first job. I was, you know, stumbling around through that. I ended up getting another job in a restaurant, and I felt that I had arrived moment, right? Another one. So I got this job, and I met this guy, once again, a guy. And we started to hang out, and first time I went out with him, I had like 5 tequila shots in a row, and him and the other people, we were all like 18. He was like, that's so cool that you can handle that. And I was like, yeah, nobody knew that I had that experience before. So that kind of came my party trick, right? I had enrolled in, right at the beginning of high school, I enlisted in the Air Force. You know, I was seeking something. I was seeking discipline. I was seeking something, somebody just to tell me what's going on, to tell me how to do life. I got out of it because I was terrified almost like the moment that I enlisted. I was like, I don't know if I can do this. So I ended up getting out of it. And I enrolled in college just to go right after I graduated high school. So I rolled in college. I lasted 3 weeks and I dropped out. I withdrew and didn't tell my parents. Like, I pretended that I was going to go, still going to college for like a couple weeks after that. And she's like, Christina, we got the email that you withdrew like a couple weeks ago. We know that you're not in college. So I said, you know, they said, if you don't get your own place within a couple of months, I'm going to start charging you rent. And I was like, bye. I'm going to move in with this guy. And so I was 18 years old, and I moved in with this guy that I met a few months before. And it was fine. Like, we partied a lot. We partied a lot. Like, that's all we did. Every weekend, it was just going to a club. Christina's blacking out. Christina's doing something crazy. Going to the apartment. Christina's blacking out. Christina's doing something crazy. I thought it was normal, but I think I was the only one that was actually, like, blacking out or being crazy. So I thought, you know, there's a lot of things that I thought in my life would help, you know, would solve my problem, right? Like, guys, I thought that would solve my problem. And so I married this guy. I convinced him to ask me to marry him. Let's just be honest. All my friends were getting engaged. They were all a couple years older than me. And I was like, I'm 18. And I'm like, everybody's getting engaged. Everybody's getting engaged. And I convinced my best friend to take him ring shopping. And they went ring shopping. And then he asked me, he asked me to marry him, and I was like, yes, finally. And I got married right before I turned 20. And it was a marriage that didn't really have much standing other than, like, we like to party and we can kind of sort of get along. And that was it. And my drinking escalated. I started to black out all the time. I started to drink at work. I was just drinking pretty much every single day. I think there was like one day that I didn't drink. I think it was like Sundays, but I don't really know why. I know we had mass, but that was about it. But I was drinking pretty much every day. My life was just chaotic. There's a lot I can't remember about that time because there was just so much. I feel like it was crazy, but I have no idea what was going on. I wasn't present to life. So, you know, I ended up getting divorced right after our first year of marriage. We got divorced because, to be frank, I cheated. I was making irrational decisions. I couldn't keep a handle on my lies and my stories, and I got wrapped up in it too much. And I was just like, well, he's not making me happy. Maybe this man will make me happy. And so I ended up cheating, and he found out, and it was a very big mess. And we just said, you know what? We're gonna go our separate ways. And that only got worse. I had no guy. I was being evicted from an apartment. He took the only car that we had. I found these two guys on Craigslist who had an extra room. I ended up living with them. Still somehow maintaining a job, but I had a job, and I had a job a mile away from where I live, so I just walked my happy drunk ass up. I don't know if I just got that. To and from work, you know, 1 mile there, drinking after work. I don't know how I would get back, but, I would just do that. I did that for 9 months. I started to dabble into other heavier things. I started dating a guy who was like a dealer, which we could know that didn't go very well at all. You know, when at the time, I thought that my life was kind of okay. You know, I thought I was about to be considered for management. Nobody was considering me for management, but I thought so. I had finally gotten a car. You know, I scraped up some money and bought a very overpriced car because they knew that they could take advantage of the fact that I had no idea what was going on. You know, I had no connection with my parents at this point, but I was like, you know what, I'm in Atlanta, I'm surviving, everything's good. Within 6 weeks, I lost the keys to that car. I lost my license twice, $500 in cash, and I lost my phone. I put it down somewhere and just walked away. And I have no idea where it was. I don't know if it was a club or a bathroom or a gas station. Who knows? All I know is I came to the day before Mother's Day, and I was like, where is my phone? And it was on MLK Drive. I don't know if I was doing anything out there. I think somebody just took it out there. But it was like all of these things. I was like, God, me and my roommate were like, Christina, you're just like losing it. You know, you're losing literally everything. You're like losing things. And so we were starting to have concern. But I was still just like, you know what? It's okay. I'm just partying. I'll get a handle on it. It's fine. Everybody who's 21, I think I just turned 21, is doing this. You know, for getting into the rooms, they didn't make me a manager, but they made me a bartender, which which wasn't the greatest decision. But I think it was a week after I started. I was still training in bar. A new manager comes in. Of course, I'm highly interested because I'd gone from dating servers to dating, like, managers because I thought, you know, I'm going to get more from you if I can get something from you. So I was very interested in him. I was very forward at that time, probably the amount of drinking. I remember he didn't introduce himself to me. I went up and I was like, well, my name's Christina. Who are you? And he goes, well, hello, Christina. I'm Juan, which is this guy right here. and I pursued him and then found out he didn't drink. And I was like, that's really weird. Okay, whatever. I didn't get it when he said he didn't drink until, like, the first time. I was like, yeah, you know, he invited me over for dinner, and he's like, if you want anything to drink, you have to bring it, you have to take it with you. And I was like, no, like, that's fine. I thought that was weird. So I was like, no, it's okay, I'll go without. So I got really drunk right before, and then went to his house. And you know, it was a nice evening, but that's kind of how things went with us. I knew I couldn't drink there, so I would get really drunk before, and then I would go to his house. And you know, in the moments of kind of sobering up or coming to, we would have these conversations. And that's when I realized, like, he really didn't drink. Like, he was serious. And then he told me about going to AA meetings and why and what his drinking was like and what happened. And I thought, like, man, this person drank and did drugs just like me. This is cool. It was inspirational. I didn't know where it was going at the time. I just knew, like, he had something about him that was cool, because it's like you can survive without drinking. So I don't, you know, it's funny. We think about this now. I always thought that he challenged me to, like, to not drink, but he says, like, I never said that. So I think I just thought he told me to not drink for a couple of weeks. So I went, like, 3 weeks without drinking. And me and this other person at work, and we're like, every day, we're like, yeah, I'm like 12 days. Yeah, I'm 13 days. And then, like, and then after, like, 20 days, I was like, yeah, I'm like 20 days. And he's like, well, I drank last night. And I was like, oh. And so then a couple of days later, I was, like, sitting at a restaurant with a group of people, and I'm, like, over here, like, white-knuckling to not drink. They're all drinking. And I'm just, they're like, Christina, I'm like, come on. I'm like, no, I'm, like, trying to take a break, guys. Like, stop asking me. But I'm still trying to hang out with the people that I would hang out with. And I remember, like, texting him and asking, you know, like, I just really want to drink right now. He would say, give it 10 minutes. Give it 10 minutes. You know, give it an hour. And that worked for that night. But the next night, just a friend of mine had a birthday party. It was a one-year-old's birthday party, but, like, He was Hispanic, and that's a really big deal, and so there's a lot of partying. So it was really the party for the adults. So I went to the birthday party. I got invited, and I totally lied and said, I'm just going to, because at this point I have my own apartment. I was like, I'm just going to go home and have a chill night tonight. And I just, like, went to this party. And I lasted maybe 2 hours without drinking. Like, somebody put a beer in front of me, and that got warm. Like, it was, because it was June. It got warm. And I was like, no, I'm not going to do it. And I was like, okay, I'll have a few. And next thing I know, it's like 9 in the morning, and I'm still drinking. And I had to go, I was supposed to get up and go help my parents move. Because my dad had a disability, my mom has severe arthritis, and they weren't able to physically move their stuff. And so we were supposed to be there to help them move. And I didn't show up. I turned off my phone. I just drank. I think I went home and passed out for a few hours. I get in my car, and I'm driving this other guy home. And I hit somebody at a stoplight. Like, I was just like, I thought we were all going. But we weren't going. So I just kind of tapped him. And so that was a whole ordeal. I think the only reason I didn't get a DUI that day is because I was still in my one-year-old birthday dress for whoever's party it was the night before, and it was a Sunday, and they were like, oh, she's probably just coming home from church. And so I, you know, got myself gathered, and I went to work. And when I went to work, I faced not just you're late for work and you look like shit. I faced, you know, you didn't show up for your parents today. I faced, you know, you keep doing this. I faced all of that disappointment. And I faced the fact that, you know, that you're a liar, that you're not honest. And it was too much for me to bear. And that's when, you know, that's when he said, you know, this is why I go to AA. Do you want to go to a meeting with me? And I said, you know, if this is going to help, then I'll go. So I went to my first meeting. It was a Wednesday before International here in Atlanta. So, like, there was just a lot going on. And I was like, and everybody kept asking if I was going to International. Like, I don't know what that is, guys. But he was going International. And so I know that weekend I was supposed to be at my apartment by myself. Because he was busy doing AA stuff. Which I was kind of like, I don't get it. And I remember that night, I was just, it was 4th of July. There was a 4th of July party. I went to the party and I didn't drink, but I was miserable. I was like, man, because I just went to this AA meeting and you guys, like, told me all of this stuff. Yeah. And I was like, oh, my God, like, I can't do this. Funny side story. I tried to steal my first white chip. yeah, or my only white chip. They offered them up, and then it says, and I'm the only new person in the room. There's, like, 6 people in this meeting. And they're like, anybody want a white chip? And I'm just like, He puts it down on the table, and I go, I'll just take that. And then they all start clapping because they all had their eyes on me. And I was like, oh, my God. So I stole my first white chip. So that after that 4th of July party is when I really felt that discomfort with myself, right? I was like, I'm not having fun. I can't, like, talk to you guys. Even though I've known you for, like, years, I can't, like, talk to you. And so I went home, and I had intentions to drink, and I was obviously very, very upset. I was crying, and I was just laying in my bed, and I had this little fifth of I think it was my roommate's. I'm pretty sure I was trying to steal it because that was my thing. You could not leave. If you were living with me, you could not leave alcohol around or I was going to take it. And I think it was like Captain Morgan. It was sitting on my nightstand, and I was just like, please help me. And I fell asleep. I just fell asleep. And I woke up, and it was still there. I hadn't drank, and that's when I was like, you know, I need to get a handle on this. So I started going to AA. Consistently, you know, well, kind of consistently. At first, I was like, 2 meetings a week is all I need, right? Yeah. 2 meetings a week is all I need. So I'm out here in sobriety at 4 months, and I'm going crazy because at 4 months, I have no idea how to live life. I'm 22. I don't have my crutch. I don't know what's going on. I feel like I can barely survive each day. I had a sponsor, but I didn't listen to her. I was doing the 1 through 4, right? I would, yeah, I got a problem. Sure, you can fix it. Okay, I'll ask, and you want me to write all this stuff down. And I would do that over and over with, like, 4 different people, seeking, not going through all of it. And so I got to this point of just absolute emotional devastation sober, and that is a very painful place to be. And I reached out for help. I asked somebody who I knew was like a crazy lady in sobriety, and she was like 90 meetings in, you know, she's like 90 meetings, 90 days. You call me every day at exactly this time. 1 minute later, she wouldn't answer my call, and I'd have to like start all over, right? She wouldn't consider the steps with me until I was consistent with that 30 days. Obviously, this was not going to work. But it got me. I got a lot of tools out of it. I learned how to try to take direction as much as I could handle at that time. I started to go to a meeting every single day, even if it meant like the Triangle Club, where I was like terrified of downtown Atlanta. The Triangle Club. I would go to a meeting. And if I couldn't get to a meeting just because I was working a crazy shift, I would read a story in the back of the big book. I started to do that, and what I started to do is I started to recognize a lot. When I started to actually be in meetings and hear you guys share, I started to actually realize what was going on. I'm going to read something real quick, because there was a story, and I just remember when it hit me, I was like, I couldn't believe. It's actually two different things. So the first one's in the story, Because I'm an Alcoholic. It's on page 342. On the surface, it looked as though I was more or less keeping it together, but day by day I was dying inside, filled with fears I couldn't name, but which shook me to the core. I was feeling that. This is on 204, it's Women Suffer Too. My inability to accept the harsh realities of life had resulted in a disillusioned cynic clothed in a protective armor against the world's misunderstandings. That armor had turned into prison walls, locking me in loneliness and fear. All I had left was an iron determination to live my own life in spite of the alien world. Here I was, an inwardly frightened, outwardly defiant woman who desperately needed a prop to keep going. And before, alcohol was my prop. But you guys taught me that it didn't have to be anymore. So I started to go through the steps, and I went through them very fast at the first time, because that's what I needed. I needed to go through all. I needed to stop doing the one to four. I needed to go through it. So I went through them within a few weeks. And then I came up to 6 months, and I started to chair meetings. I started once a month. I got to have some type of commitment. So I started chair meeting at this 12:30 group. It's called Holy Family. It's out in Marietta, Holy Family Catholic Church. And there was a lot of old people there, sorry. And I was like the only young person at that meeting. But they took me in. You know, they dealt with or tolerated my crazy topics because I was chairing at 6 months, and I was like, this is what we're going to talk about today. And so, you know, they let me go through all of that growing. They were just like these guiding parents, or just like more like these guiding just grandparents of like, hey, like, I know you have a sponsor and they're showing you these things, but like, we're just going to kind of protect you. Let's see, where am I at? I ended up getting another sponsor, and she's this woman who moved down from Jersey, and I was going through this really just crazy time, I felt like, because everything was changing, and things were changing about me that I couldn't handle. So I met this woman, and we started to go through the steps, and we went line by line through this book, and it took a year. But we went through it, and I did the most detailed fourth step I was able to do at that time. I continued to chair once a month or more than that. I just kept going. I tried to help as much as I could. You know, right before my first year of sobriety, somebody asked me to tell my story for their birthday. And I was like, oh, that's cool. So I started to do that. I started to say yes whenever you guys offered something to me, because I knew that I needed to do it. It was right before my second anniversary. I got a call. You know, things had changed in my life at that time. You know, I got a better job. I got a cooler car. You know, I was in a stable apartment. You know, I was making some money. Like, I was doing okay. But I got a call that my sister, who I just met not too long ago, overdosed and died due to heroin. And that shook my sobriety. It was hard because it was somebody who's struggling the same as we all struggle. And, you know, at that time I was almost unable to reach out to her because I was struggling as well. But I did the best that I could, and we had a relationship sort of, and we all went down to Florida, and I got to go to the clubhouse that she was going to because she was trying to get sober. She was had 30 days, 60 days. She was almost up to 90 days this time. And then she went back out, and she just didn't come back. And that's the reality of this. And I was able to experience something that was amazing. I was able to go to a clubhouse and be surrounded by all these people who knew her and knew that she was trying. And to hear them share about how this had affected them and their sobriety. And it was just beautiful. It helped me to really realize that this is too short. All of this stuff of all this craziness I go through every day of just like, this person's making me angry, you know, I'm scared of this. It kind of helped me in that life is too short. I don't know if I'm going to go back out. I don't know if I'm going to, you know, die tomorrow due to a car accident. I don't know, but I have to live life today the best that I can. I ended up, through all this, I was going back to college, and I was undeclared because I had no idea what I wanted to do. but after this experience, I really chose my major, and I feel like this is a calling that I'm supposed to do, and it's health coaching. It's just to help people kind of understand themselves and their bodies more. But it was crazy is that when I chose that, I knew that, like, there's no more waiting, right? This experience with my sister taught me that there's no more waiting for, like, the things that I want to do. Life's too short. Don't know what's going to happen. And I did suffer a little bit in my program. I started to kind of withdraw, but I had a good network that kept me going. I had trained my feet well enough to keep me going. Following March is when I ended up coming, moving out. No, I'm sorry, it was May. I was moving to Douglasville. I was just in Marietta, not far. But we bought a house out here in Douglasville. And so I started to feel, right after this happened with my sister, there was like this weird time, right? It was like 9 months of just kind of like, I'm in pain. I don't know what's going on. I was still getting asked to speak. John over here blindsided me, said, yeah, you want to come to our 15-minute speaker? I'm like, yeah. I walked in, there was like 200 plus people there. I was like, oh my gosh. And I was speaking before Ralph White, who was like this, hey, God. And I was like sitting next to this man, and I'm like, hey, I'm Christina. So nervous. But you know, somebody asked me to tell my story shortly after that. And like I said, then we just moved out here. And so I was still doing these things that I need to do. These things that you guys taught me is going to save me. Trying to be of service. So we moved out here, and I ended up, having this big, I went to Girl Stock last year, and I had this big, like, just moment of like, hey, you're walking along in this program, but it's time for you to start running in it. And it lit a fire under my ass that I need to change some things. And so I got a sponsor, a new sponsor. The sponsor that I was having at the time, she was struggling with her own issues, and that's all right. That's what happens sometimes. So I got a new sponsor. My sponsor right now is Lisa Westlake. She's out in Vegas. Her sponsor is Bob Darrell. His sponsor is Clancy. So I come from a good line of sponsorship. And through this last year, she has definitely whipped my butt into shape. She's like, you know, you will, continue to be of service. See if you can get into jail meetings. See if there's anything to do with treatment centers out there. See what else you can do. And so I've been chugging along and trying to do this. Anything that somebody says yes, like, can you do this? Yes, I can do it. I got to experience this really cool workshop in Vegas not too long ago. The whole sponsorship family goes out there, and it's just like this really big weekend, and it was awesome. So with this sponsor, I've gone once again through the steps detailed. I'm telling you, she's detailed. She said, yeah, I want you to write your inventory, and when you come out to Vegas, we're going to do it all at one time. And I was like, what do you mean? She's like, yeah, we're just going to go through all of it. And it took 5 hours, and it was intense. But you know what I learned? I needed that to beat my ego down because, yeah, I came into AA just like, just devastated, but my ego grows back and sober. and it has the ability to do that. And that's what was happening. That's what I realized at that Girl Stock, was that I was living a life that was kind of like I said, just kind of walking through AA, but not really giving it the devotion that it's going to need to keep my ass sober. So we did this fifth step, and, you know, other things have come from from that. There's a lot of things that I've had to realize about myself, a lot of hard things that I've had to, like, big truths, you know, you have to swallow about yourself, which I know everybody who's gone through that fourth and fifth step have experienced that. You know, even right now, in sobriety, like, or right now in life, things seem a little chaotic for me, but I know that as long as I continue to show up, I can survive here. As long as I continue to say yes, I can survive here. And I want to read, I love this book, so I read from it a lot. Anybody who's heard me chair, I'm eating here, you know I always come from the book, because it saved my life. So I want to read, I have a bookmark here somewhere. All right. It's on page 346. It's in the story, Because I'm an Alcoholic Again. It says, I'm amazed to look back and remember the woman or child I was then to see how far I've come out of that abyss. Alcoholics Anonymous has enabled me to move from fantasies about what I might do with my life into living it one day at a time. And that's something that you guys all promised me, and that's something that I know that I can stay here as long as that's what I'm working towards. And this is my favorite thing to always close with, because this is what AA is for me now. And this is what my higher power has given me in this program. It says, most of us feel we need to look no further for utopia. We have it with us right here and right now. And that's from the end of Bill's story on page 16. So I thank you guys for hearing me. All right.